All right, welcome to the deep dive. You know how this works. You send us the sources, the stuff you're really trying to get a handle on, and we go deep, pulling out the gold just for you.
Yeah, we cut through the noise, zero in on what really matters. We do the heavy lifting so you don't have to.
And today, well, today we're tackling something pretty cool, building what's called a multi-tenant RAG chatbot. And we're on Microsoft Azure, so that adds a whole other layer.
Right. Cloud-based AI, it's its own beast.
You bet. Now, the sources you sent over, these excerpts from a technical design document, they lay out how to make one chatbot, just one that can securely handle multiple clients. And get this, each client has their own completely separate data.
The holy grail of data isolation.
Exactly. That's at the heart of this whole deep dive, figuring out how they pull that off, keeping each client's data totally locked down, no mixing allowed, while still making the system scalable and efficient. That's the challenge.
It's a balancing act for sure. And the solutions they've come up with, well, they're pretty clever, using some really interesting technical tricks.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about it, you've got multiple companies, each with their own confidential stuff, all using the same chatbot platform. That right there is a recipe for disaster if you don't get the architecture right.
Absolutely. One slip up and you've got data leakage, which is a nightmare scenario. Trust is paramount, especially when you're dealing with sensitive information.
Okay, so let's break down the core challenge here. Data isolation. It can't be overstated. We're talking documents, embeddings, those numerical representations of the text search indexes, the whole nine yards. All of that needs to be completely separate for each client.
Zero chance of crossover. Think of it like airtight compartments.
Yeah, perfect analogy. Now, for those who might not be as familiar with this RAG thing, it stands for Retrieval Augmented Generation.
Yeah.
But basically, it means the chatbot grabs the relevant info from a specific data set and then uses that to cook up an answer. So imagine doing that, but with multiple clients, each with their own private data pool. Things get tricky fast.
It goes from a simple search to a multidimensional puzzle.
Exactly. And that's what makes these design choices so interesting. The document actually outlines several different approaches they considered and why some were ultimately rejected. That in itself is super insightful, seeing the thought process behind the final recommendations.
It highlights the real-world constraints and trade-offs involved. It's not just about theoretical elegance, but about what actually works in practice.
Okay, so blueprint number one, separate instances. This one's pretty straightforward, right? You essentially spin up a completely independent copy of the entire system, all the Azure resources, databases, the code itself for each client, like completely separate universes.
Maximum isolation right there. It's conceptually simple too. Each client has their own dedicated sandbox, so there's just no way for data to mingle. And each client can scale their system independently, even customize it to their heart's content.
But there's a catch, and it's a big one. Cost. I mean, you're duplicating everything, which means your Azure bill is going to be through the roof. And managing all those separate systems, oh boy, that's a whole other headache. The document even mentions that you'd absolutely need infrastructure as code, automation for deployment, just to keep your sanity.
Yeah, the operational overhead would be immense. It's like having to maintain a fleet of identical cars, each with its own quirks and maintenance schedule.
So while you get that Fort Knox level security, it comes at a premium price, both financially and in terms of your time and effort.
A classic trade-off. Sometimes the simplest solutions are the most expensive and complex to operate at scale.
All right, next up, logical separation within Azure AI search. This one sounds like they were trying to find a more efficient way to do things.
Yeah, the idea here is you use a single Azure AI search service, so you're not paying for multiple ones, but you carve it up internally, creating separate logical indexes for each client. Imagine it like having separate labeled folders within a filing cabinet.
So you're saving money, and it seems like it would be easier to manage than a zillion separate instances.
Right, less moving parts, less to keep track of. However, the document throws up a major red flag here, the risk of cross-contamination. They basically say, even with these logical divisions, there's a chance, however small that data from one client could end up in another client's search results. And in this kind of environment, even a tiny risk is too much.
It's like those folders in the filing cabinet having a hole in them. Not good.
Not good at all, especially when you're dealing with confidential information. And on top of that, Azure AI Search has limits on how many indexes you can create within a single service. So if you've got a lot of clients, you're going to hit that ceiling pretty quickly.
Scalability issues. And the document also mentions noisy neighbor effects, meaning one client's heavy usage could impact the performance for others. So not ideal.
It's like everyone sharing the same internet connection. If one person starts downloading a huge file, everyone else's browsing slows to a crawl.
Okay, on to strategy number three. And this is the one they really seem to favor. Logical separation, but using a dedicated vector database. And they specifically call out MongoDB Atlas with its vector search capabilities.
Yeah, this is where things get really interesting. Vector databases, they're specifically designed to handle those high-dimensional vector embeddings that are so crucial for ARG systems. And MongoDB Atlas, it's got this built-in multi-tenancy feature where you can create separate collections for each client. Think of it like having dedicated vaults within a secure bank.
So each client's data is in its own little fortress, so to speak. And the document highlights good isolation, excellent scalability, and music to our ears, cost-effective compared to those separate instances.
It's striking that balance, right? You're not replicating the entire system, but you're still getting that strong separation of data. Plus, vector databases are designed to handle those complex embeddings, and they scale really well.
This sounds like a win-win. But they do mention a trade-off, right? You're introducing a new dependency, the vector database itself, and it requires careful configuration.
Yeah, you're essentially adding another piece to the puzzle. You have to manage and monitor the database, and you have to configure it correctly to ensure that data isolation. But honestly, those are manageable challenges compared to the potential downsides of the other approaches.
Okay, now this next one caught my attention, mainly because it seemed kind of risky after the earlier warnings about relying on logical separation within Azure AI Search. This one's using a single index, but with client ID filtering. So they're trying to make that single search index work for everyone.
It's a bold move, and the document makes it clear that it comes with big risks. The idea is you have one giant index in Azure AI Search with all the data from all the clients. But to keep things separate, you attach a special tag, a client tied, to every single piece of data. And whenever you search, you have to filter by that ID. No exceptions.
Okay, so in theory, if that filter is always working perfectly, you're golden, right? Data stays separate.
In theory, yes. And the upsides are pretty attractive. You get good scalability in terms of how many clients you can handle because you're not limited by the number of indexes in AI search. And it can be cheaper because you're only running one search service.
But the document immediately slaps a giant warning label on this approach. Critical risk of data leakage. If that filter fails, for any reason, a bug in the code, a human error, anything, you've got a major breach on your hands.
It's a single point of failure, and the consequences of that failure are severe. You're essentially putting all your eggs in one basket and hoping that basket never develops a hole.
So, yeah, high stakes. They do say it might be okay in very specific situations, like if you have a tiny number of clients, a shoestring budget, and a development team that's incredibly disciplined about always using that filter correctly. But for anything else, especially when you have a lot of clients or you absolutely cannot tolerate any risk of data mixing, they basically say, don't even think about it.
It's a cautionary tale. Sometimes the allure of saving money or simplifying things can lead to cutting corners on security, and that's almost always a bad idea in the long run.
Right. And finally, there's the hybrid approach. This one's interesting because it suggests that there's not always a one-size-fits-all answer.
Exactly. The hybrid approach acknowledges that sometimes, due to unique constraints or specific client needs, you might need to combine elements of different strategies. The core principle, though, remains the same. Keep the original client data separate in its own storage and have robust ingestion processes to get that data into the system securely. Whether you primarily rely on the vector database or have to incorporate some elements of the single index approach, those fundamentals are non-negotiable.
So it's about having that flexibility to adapt while always prioritizing the most secure and scalable option, which in most cases is going to be that vector database approach.
It's about being pragmatic, understanding the trade-offs, and choosing the solution that best fits the specific context.
All right, so we've covered the big architectural decisions, and let's zoom in on how this thing actually works on a day-to-day basis. How does the system know which client is making a request? And how does it get to the right data for that client without mixing anything up?
So there are several ways they handle client identification. It could be through a unique identifier in the request header. They mention examples like XEMF client principal or even a custom X client aid header. Or maybe it's an API key that's associated with each client. They even talk about using subdomains or pulling information from the user's login credentials. But ultimately, the design they settled on focuses on extracting a unique client from the authentication token that's provided when a user or application tries to access the chatbot.
Okay, so it's like a digital badge that says, this request is coming from client A or client B and so on.
Exactly. And once the system has that ID, it can route the request accordingly. If they're using MongoDB Atlas, the system will dynamically select the correct collection based on that client ID. So if it sees client A, it goes straight to the client A documents collection. With Azure AI Search, it uses the same index for everyone, but the client ID gets added as a filter to the search query, ensuring you only see your own stuff.
It's like having a key card that only unlocks your designated area in a building.
Exactly. You can only access what you're authorized to access.
And speaking of authorization, security is obviously top of mind here. How do they make sure that only the right people and applications can get to the data in the first place?
They've got a multi-layered approach to security, and it starts with Azure Active Directory, or Azure AD. This is their identity platform. Think of it as the gatekeeper that verifies who or what is trying to get in. They also use something called managed identities to give the chatbot application secure access to the resources it needs, like MongoDB Atlas or Azure AI Search. This is a huge deal from a security perspective because it means they don't have to store any sensitive credentials, like passwords, directly in the application code.
So it's like giving the application its own special ID card to access those services, rather than having it carry around a master key that could be compromised.
Exactly. It limits the blast radius if something goes wrong. Now let's talk about getting all that data into the system in the first place. We're talking multiple clients, each with their own sets of documents, potentially coming from all over the place. How do they manage that securely and efficiently?
Yeah, because that initial ingestion process is a critical point, right? You've got to make sure you're pulling in the right data, keeping it separate, and doing it all without creating a giant mess.
Right, and that's where the data ingestion pipeline comes into play. This thing's designed to handle a whole smorgasbord of data sources, everything from files sitting in Azure Blob Storage to documents tucked away in SharePoint Online, even files on local machines. They use what they call a configuration-driven approach to make this all work.
Configuration-driven? That sounds a bit technical. What does that mean in plain English?
Basically, each client gets their own configuration file, usually written in YAML format. Think of it like a client's instruction manual. It tells the system, hey, here's where you can find all my data, and here are the details you need to access it. They list out each data source, along with the necessary connection info, like web addresses or file paths. And crucially, any sensitive stuff, like passwords or API keys, is kept separate in environment variables, so it's never directly exposed in the configuration file itself.
Okay, so each client has their own little instruction booklet.
Right.
But how does the system actually connect to those different sources and grab the data?
That's where data source connectors come in. These are essentially pieces of code, specifically Python classes in this case, that are designed to talk to different types of data sources. They all have common functions like connect, list files, and get file content. The document gives examples like an Azure Blob connector for handling Azure Blob storage and a SharePoint Online connector for SharePoint. To make sure the right connector is used for each data source type in that configuration file, they use a factory function called getConnector. It's like a connector vending machine. You give it the data source type, and it dispenses the right tool for the job.
That's pretty clever. So we have the instructions and the tools. Now, what happens to the data once it's been fetched?
That's where the main ingestion script takes over. This is another Python script, and it's the workhorse of the whole process. It reads each client's configuration file, goes through their data sources, and uses those connectors to pull in the files. Then it does a bunch of important stuff. It extracts the text content from different types of documents they specifically mention. PDFs breaks that text down into smaller, more manageable chunks, generates those vector embeddings using a model, maybe something like one from OpenAI, and finally stores all that processed data, along with details about the original document, into either MongoDB Atlas or Azure AI Search, depending on the chosen architecture. Oh, and this script is built to be robust, too. It handles things like processing data in batches, managing errors, and making sure that even if you run the process multiple times, you don't end up with duplicate data. That's what they mean by idempotency.
Makes sense. And to automate this whole ingestion process, they're using GitHub Actions workflow.
You got it. That lets them schedule the ingestion to run automatically maybe every day or every week, or they can trigger it manually when needed. And for managing those sensitive credentials, like connection strings and API keys, they use GitHub Action Secrets. It's all about keeping things secure and automated.
Smart. Now, what about situations where different clients have slightly different types of information they want to store? I mean, not every document is going to have the same fields. How do they handle that without making the database structure super complicated?
That's a good question. The trick here is using sparse fields, and both Azure AI Search and MongoDB Atlas support this. The idea is you define a comprehensive list of all the possible fields that any client might use. But then, for each individual document, you only store the values for the fields that are actually relevant for that document. It's like having a giant spreadsheet with tons of columns, but you only fill in the cells that have actual data.
So it's about flexibility without creating a ton of wasted space.
Efficient. Okay, we've talked a lot about keeping data separate between clients, but what about controlling who within a client's organization can access what? How do they make sure someone from the marketing department can't see sensitive financial documents, or that someone from company A can't peek at company B's data?
That's the authorization piece of the puzzle, and they've got several layers of security in place. The fundamental rule, of course, is that you can only see data for the client you're authorized for. Their initial approach uses Azure's Easy Auth feature with Azure AD. So when a user logs in, Azure AD issues a token that includes a bunch of info about them, including their client ISAID, and this is attached to the token as a claim. The chatbot application can then read that claim and use it to enforce basic access control, making sure you're routed to the right collection in MongoDB Alice, or that the correct filter is applied in Azure AI Search. So that's the first line of defense. You can only see data from your company. But what if you need finer control than that? Like, maybe only certain roles within the company should have access to certain types of documents.
That's where they bring in fine-grained access control. And they do this by using metadata and filtering. During that data ingestion process, they tag documents with extra bits of information, like roles, department, or sensitivity level. Then, when someone tries to search, the system checks not only their client ID, but also their specific permissions, which are initially also included as claims in the Easy Auth token. They combine this information to create a very targeted filter. In MongoDB, they might use a match stage for this, while in Azure AI Search, it's done using OData filter syntax. So even if you're in the right client, you still can't see stuff you're not authorized for.
So it's like adding an extra layer of security on top of those digital badges. And the document mentions that they're planning to move towards using an external authorization service in the future.
Right. They're looking at services like Azure AD B2C, Auth, or even Open Policy Agent. This would give them more flexibility and scalability when it comes to managing authorization rules, especially as they get more clients and the access requirements become more complex. It's like having a dedicated security team that can handle all the fine-grained access control.
Now, what happens when those access rules change? Like, if someone gets a promotion and they should now be able to see different documents.
That's where they need a process for updating the metadata on existing documents. It's got to be efficient, especially if you're dealing with a lot of data. They talk about using bulk update operations in MongoDB and Azure AI Search and making sure the process runs in the background so it doesn't slow things down. And of course, robust error handling is a must. You don't want those metadata updates failing silently.
Okay, last but not least, let's talk about the code examples that are included in the document. We won't go through every line here, but what do those examples really show us in the context of everything we've discussed?
The code is where the rubber meets the road. It's where you see all these abstract concepts come to life. For example, the dataconnectors.py file shows exactly how those connectors are implemented for Azure Blob Storage and SharePoint. You can see the functions they use, how they connect to those services, how they pull down the files. Then there's the mainingestion.py script for MongoDB. It shows how it reads the client configuration, uses the appropriate connectors, processes the files, generates the embeddings, and then dynamically selects the right MongoDB collection to store the data. And the Azure AI Search example does something similar, demonstrating how they embed that client ID within each document.
And there are examples for the search side too, right? Showing how the client ID is used to make sure you only see the results you're supposed to see.
Absolutely. The search documents MongoD and search documents Azure Research functions demonstrate exactly how they construct those filters, both for client-level access and for that more granular role-based access. You even see how they pull the client ID and the user's roles from the request. And there's an example configuration file, clientconfigc.yamlallow, so you can see how all the data sources for a client are defined. Plus, there's the .github workflowsingestdata.eml file, which shows the whole automated ingestion process using GitHub Actions in action. It's like a mini tutorial that brings all the pieces together.
So to sum up, building a secure, multi-tenant RA chatbot is no small feat. It's a delicate balancing act, weighing security, scalability, and cost. And while there are multiple ways to approach it, the document strongly favors using a vector database, specifically MongoDB Atlas, for its built-in multi-tenancy features. It's the option that seems to tick the most boxes when it comes to keeping data safe, handling a growing number of clients, and keeping costs in check.
Right. While that single index Azure AI search method with the client ID filtering is technically possible, it's a high-risk gamble. One mistake and you've got a data leak, which can be devastating. The document makes it clear that approach is only viable in very specific circumstances, and even then it requires extreme vigilance.
It's fascinating to see all the technical wizardry they use to make this work, from the way they use database features and filtering to keep data separated, to those automated processes for managing all that incoming data and that multi-layered approach to security. It's pretty impressive.
It's a testament to the power of thoughtful design. They've clearly put a lot of care into thinking through all the potential pitfalls and creating a system that's both secure and capable of handling future growth.
So for our listeners out there, think about the bigger picture here. This idea of multi-tenancy, it's not just about chatbots. It's a fundamental challenge in all sorts of cloud-based AI services. What other areas do you think this applies to? And what are some of the other challenges that might pop up when you're trying to build these shared systems while still keeping everyone's data safe and sound? It's a really interesting question, and it gets at the heart of some of the biggest challenges in cloud security, database design, and AI architecture. Thanks for diving deep with us.